This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a Friday on the Hoffman Show. Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube too, if you like, at the Team 980. And we are pretty pumped up for a marquee matchup. Yep, they are the game of the week. The Washington Commanders, your Washington Commanders, and the Baltimore Ravens. Nance and Romo will be in the booth. The whole country will be watching. It's the feature on all of the pregame shows. And no, Anthony, all we're trying to do, it's another week for us. We're straight ahead. We're just following the script. We're showing up at the same time at the facility every single day. We're getting our work done. And hopefully we'll come out. Wait, we're not. We don't have to play.
No, we don't.
We're just gonna talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I had you going there for a second, though.
No, you did. You had me hype, and that's what you're supposed to do on this Football Friday, Craig. Get the people ready for this showdown between Lamar, Jaden, the Ravens, the Commanders. Let's go! It's Friday. Come on.
I got multiple notepads.
Oh, there it is.
I got two pens.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Drum roll, baby.
Pen roll. What really is at stake this weekend? That's what we always start on Fridays, right? What's at stake for the Commanders this weekend? More so than any other week, it is ultimate proof point of the plan. Now, I have actually had this conversation with multiple people today in a variety of different ways from my old doorman, because when we moved a block over, and so sometimes I still run into the guy who like works at the front desk at my old apartment building. And so I was walking with him, Antoine, if you're listening, shout out to you because I know you do. But I was talking with Antoine today. I had this conversation with him. I had this conversation with my dad last night, on the ride home from work because I gave him a call. I've had this conversation on when I take my DC News Now interview earlier today. So on television, now radio, and in real life, just walking around the streets or in personal phone calls, I've had some version of this discussion, which is there is nothing that can happen on Sunday that changes how I feel long term about this team, which is a great thing. That is a positive, not a negative. That is fantastic. There is no doubt that we already have proof of concept for the Adam Peters plan. One, we know that they drafted the right quarterback. You cannot convince me otherwise, certainly not in a single game. I would have a hard time seeing, like, if the rest of the season were to go sideways because he self-sabotages, like, sure, okay. But, like, we already know that's not who he is. He's not going to self-sabotage. This is a guy that is going to go about his work every single day. He has shown that he can do it at the NFL level, and all he will probably do is continue to keep showing it. That doesn't mean every game is going to be perfect. He will have his ups and downs. There will be mistakes that are made, but those mistakes won't ruin him because he is mentally strong enough to handle it. And he is smart enough to know how to read defenses, to operate this offense, all of the above. People know what Jaden Daniels is, and that's a great thing. We also know that there's a lot of other really good players that they drafted. Jerzon Newton has popped more and more each and every week, getting more and more pressure, showing the hustle, the heart, the ability to cover ground and make tackles that got him drafted in the second round and why they had a first round grade on him. Mike Sander still has continued to evolve into a more and more useful player each and every week, now playing the outside corner. Eventually he'll probably move back inside. But for right now, like, wow, he is a guy that was drafted to play inside that is already proving to be able to play on the outside in the NFL with just a few weeks of working on it. We've seen the free agents that they brought in be impactful in Luvu and Wagner and Ertz and all these guys, and not just those guys, right? The more rotational level players, the Lamide Zaccheauses, the Austin Ecklers, like very key pieces of this team. They know what they want. They're very good at finding it, and that proof point is essential to maintaining the roster over time. We already have a proof point, a proof of concept, even, I would say, a proof of concept that what Adam Peters wants to do and works, and that Dan Quinn's the right guy to push the buttons day to day. We have that proof. The question for this weekend is, how good can you be right now? How good can you be in 2024? And the answer already is probably better than a lot of people thought. You win this weekend, or you go, at the very least, go toe-to-toe with Baltimore this weekend, then we are talking about better than everybody thought. Because you can compete with anyone. Like, you already beat a Bengals team that did go toe-to-toe with the Chiefs and went toe-to-toe with this Ravens team this past weekend. And they went toe-to-toe with you, but you ultimately won the football game. The Ravens are, one, they're the Ravens. They don't need any further explanation. But they also have gone toe-to-toe with the Chiefs. And if it wasn't for Isaiah Likely's toe being a little too big, they would have beat the Chiefs in week one, something that no one has done yet. Yes, they did lose a wacky one to the Raiders. But, like, they're the Baltimore Ravens. We know they're a model of excellence in this league. And if you can go out and beat them, and Lamar Jackson is having an unbelievable year, and he presents some very unique challenges, and if you can conquer those challenges, you are capable of beating anyone. And if I can say that about you, then, like, yes, for this silly radio show's purposes, you get to live in the prime contenders tier on our tier rankings. But more importantly, in real life, it means that if you get to the playoffs, like, you're capable of it. And again, the chances that we're still having this conversation in November, December, like, they're not 100. Because that's not how football works. We've seen teams get off to 6-2 starts and then tank, and all of a sudden they're in the middle of the playoff race going the wrong directions. Hell, the Eagles started 10-1 last year, and I wouldn't have wanted to be them by December. Like, they completely fell apart. And so for this team, it does really accelerate the timeline. It might, on a realistic basis, make you think harder about whether it's a T. Higgins or a Davante Adams. They're apparently out on Adams, but T. Higgins or whoever else at the trade deadline at the wide receiver position, if that becomes an area where you're a little scared, you're a little thin, or you know that you can take your offense to the next level with one of those guys, or pursuing a pass rusher or a corner or whatever else you want to do, but you become a buyer, because why wouldn't you be? Like, it can change this game. If you get to 5-1, you're so well positioned from the playoff perspective. You're so well positioned from a confidence perspective. You're so well positioned from a, hey, we can compete right now perspective, that it's not about changing the process over time. Cause I do think Adam Peters is going to be very patient here, but you also don't want to waste opportunities. And all of a sudden, I think if you win this weekend, you're looking at yourself in the mirror going, do we have an extra opportunity here on a rookie quarterback contract timeline in the cheapest year we're ever going to have Jaden Daniels, while we still have a ton of cap space that we can take on a salary? Is it worth taking a big cut this year? Not at the expense of anything long term outside of some element of draft capital, but is it worth saying, for right now, we should take that swing? And I did not imagine we'd be here this fast. It's just the laws of NFL gravity tell us that that is not how this works. But that's how it's gone so far. Now, that's the upside. If you lose this weekend, I think it becomes a lot easier to stay patient and stay the course. Yes, you still probably are going to be on a great path towards the playoffs, because even if you lose this weekend, frankly, even if you get blown out this weekend, if you learn the lessons from this, this can be a very important game for your success in the long term. But then the Carolina Panthers come, and they're barely an NFL football team. And then the Chicago Bears come, and you can definitely beat them. And there's other teams that are coming down the schedule that are much more like the teams that you've beat, and not just beat in some cases, but throttled. Except for the Pittsburgh Steelers, basically, until you get into some division games later in November, your schedule is not that bad. And so I think that if you lose, it becomes very easy to say, hey, let's see how good we can be this year with what we got. Let's stand pat. Let's not get too aggressive. You couldn't make the argument the other way. Hey, if you lose, it proves that you need another one. Let's say, you know, Terry gets locked down because they double him and no one else can make plays. It's like, well, dang, go trade for T. Higgins tomorrow. If the Bengals were to lose this weekend and whatever, like, you could make that argument too. And it's not a totally illogical one, But I think what is at stake this weekend ultimately is if you think that you can contend, and I'm going to say it because this is really what we're talking about here. Can you contend for a Super Bowl this year? Straight up. Can you? If you win, or you prove that you're on the level of Baltimore, then the answer is yes. And if you're like, whoa, okay, this is different, not so much, still doesn't mean that you failed. It just means you haven't gotten there yet. And that's, considering where they are in the rebuild, much more in line with where we'd hope they would be when we started this season. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. When we get back, let's get into the keys of the game. Anthony and I will give one each. Well, I can also take some of your calls at 301-230-0980. Then Finish Friday, your predictions coming up at 4:30. And yes, it's happening. The Godfather himself, John Keim, joins us 5 o'clock live here on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. Time for our keys to the game before we get to your calls at 301-230-0980. That is the Team 980 listener line, of course. But Anthony, I'll let you start. I got all these notes. I got all these fancy statistics and things about stuff. What's your key to the game? And then I'll see what you say, and maybe I'll throw some of these statistics, but throw them at you. And then I don't know why I just felt the need to like pretend like I was peeling ink off paper and throwing it at you. And then I'll hit everybody with a couple of things that I'm thinking about.
I think my first key, outside of, you know, everything as far as stopping Derrick Henry, stopping Lamar, I think for the Commanders, I think we have to win the time of possession. And that goes with, you know, extending drives, converting on third downs, and just trying to keep the Baltimore offense on the sidelines. I think if we can go out there and do that, I think we'll have some success. I expect it to be a shootout. You know, I think the Commanders, I don't know if they necessarily expect it to be a shootout, but we all expect it to be a high-scoring game. So I think if we can just limit the opportunities that Lamar and Derrick Henry, they have, I think that'll go well for us. We try to do it against Joe Burrow and the Bengals. We end up winning the time of possession. Defense didn't get any stops. Well, we got stops to an extent. We held them to a couple of
field goals. Not a lot.
But
not a,
if we can just, you know, do just enough to – limit those guys and their opportunities, I think that'll position us to be able to win this game, especially if we're capitalizing on third downs, extending the drives, and scoring. We have to score.
Yeah, no, I mean, hey, hold the ball and score. That is, you know,
I mean, it sounds simple.
It sounds simple, but it like ultimately is. I do think this game, the game flow is so important, and I feel like I say that term a lot. Yeah. Just like, can you control the game in terms of time, score, situation? Because like, how do you want to put this, right? Like, if you're up and you're Washington, right, your entire playbook is open and you have the ability to run the football. You have the ability to play action pass, and it's all believable. Like, you can run a play whenever you want, but if you're down 21 in the third quarter and you're running play action, those linebackers don't care if you run it. So they're not going to bite. The windows are not going to be as big. You're not going to get the desired effect. And so it's critically important that Washington finishes drives, and that if this thing is a shootout, that they're right there so that they can keep it being a shootout and hope that their defense is the one that figures it out first. And there are opportunities. I mean, here are the actual things that are written on this notepad. Like, the Baltimore defense is 21st in EPA per play. They're 26th in EPA per play per the pass. They're only 20th in quarterback pressure percentage, and they're 26th in blitz percentage. So they are a team that is playing back a little bit, and it's not necessarily working out great for them. So there are a lot of, like, they're 31st in the league in, like, pass yards against. But some of that is volume. Some of that is the fact that they have been up in games and teams have been going after them. But it's also worked. And, like, per play, this defense has not been very good. And they've given up a lot of huge chunks. And so I think the key is, can you get them in conflict? And I think the good news is, I haven't looked at their actual red zone numbers, but like I did watch a lot of the tape, and sometimes I'm like, right, I watched this. I watched all the touchdowns, so it feels like this defense is bad because I watched all the touchdowns scored against it. But so you have to go back and obviously balance it out with the numbers. But one of the ways that teams have been able to score down in the red zone is they're able to put guys in conflict, and like Baltimore will eat themselves alive, or has eaten themselves alive. Like they'll just drop guys. They will not pick up stuff fast enough. There is air for Jaden Daniels in this offense to throw into from a passing game standpoint. So I'm very intrigued to see how this thing ultimately plays out with Jaden and company on the field, because I do think there's a ton of opportunity, but there's also going to be an intensity and a physicality that Washington's been able to dictate in most games this year, Ant, that I don't know that they're going to have quite the advantage, because obviously we know one thing about the Ravens. They are going to play hard to and potentially through the whistle.
Yeah, intensity is definitely one thing, and I think you touched on it earlier in the week in terms of the Ravens having the experience that they haven't played in, you know, big games, been in big moments, and this is kind of, you know, familiar for most of the guys on our team outside of Bobby Wagner, who's won a Super Bowl and been in these moments. So it's definitely something to, you know, watch out for, but I feel as though Jaden Daniels, just the way he carries himself, the aura he has, he's not fazed by anything. And I'm excited to, you know, see him, you know, face some adversity. Say we do go down. Say the Ravens get the ball and they go down and score and, you know, we're playing from behind. I'm excited to see that. So I think this is also just a game in which we can continue to see the growth and progress of Jaden Daniels. And that's what this season's mainly been dedicated to. Before the season start, we wanted to see if this guy's our franchise quarterback, and we wanted to see him go up and down, go through the peaks and valleys of, you know, being a quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, it was funny because Logan was like kind of almost like low-key pissed about the fact that Jaden and company did not get more challenged with Cleveland. He's like, I wanted to see it. Like, I wanted to see how they react.
Yeah.
I wanted to see how it all goes down, if that's the case. So I do find that like kind of funny. And I think it's a great point. Like, ultimately, how do they respond? Like, if they get punched in the mouth, they responded great when it's the first half against Cincinnati and, yep, you know, some tough moments against New York and, you know, Arizona even goes down and scores on the first drive and Washington bounces right back and then thrashes him. But they've never had that moment in the fourth quarter. I guess the closest is Cincinnati and it's 3rd and 7 and Jaden delivers the throw of the year. You know, you could argue like the throw of his life, but it's the kind of thing that you do. Like, you do take that into consideration, right? Where, yeah, you're just like, hey, this is something they haven't done against this caliber opponent. It doesn't mean they can't do it. It just means they haven't yet because they haven't had the opportunity. So can they ultimately finish? The other note that I'll just say real quick, it's going to be a frustrating day defensively because they are, like, Baltimore's just that good, and specifically Lamar is that good. They are a team that it's kind of funny to watch them operate because they have some things that you're like, okay, that sounds like good for the defense. They're kind of predictable on first down. They're just unpredictable enough that it's a problem, but they want to run the ball on first down. The problem is their run game is so varied that knowing what's about to come at you, is it going to be inside zone, outside zone, you know, power, GT, pin pull, trap, like any run that you can think of and some that you haven't is in their playbook. So even that alone does make things a little bit difficult. But they want to run the ball, or they'll hit you with play action on first down. So you do have to stay really alert because they will, you know, Lamar will go for that stretch and then all of a sudden boot out. And now he's on the edge. And if you have your receivers covered, he can run. And if you don't, then he'll find him. So that is tough, but they are fairly consistently conservative. You don't have to worry about some of the quick game and stuff as much on first down. They are also that way because they're not afraid of third and long. And they're really aggressive on third and long. Some teams, when it's third and long, they're just like, yeah, we'll punt and we'll try again next time. Screen, draw, you know, short pass. If a guy breaks a tackle, great. But like, we just don't want to take another sack. They drop Lamar back and they run vertical routes And if someone's open or could be open, he'll throw, and he throws a good anticipation. Like, he'll put it out there. And if not, what he's done is he's sent all those defenders with those receivers down the field, and now there's a bunch of open green grass for Lamar Jackson to run, and that is terrifying. So they are, I think this is intentionally aggressive on third and long, and that creates a ton of opportunities for Lamar to extend plays, a bunch of grass to work with, and then he can do a lot of stuff with that grass, whether it's run into it or obviously hit guys off schedule. So that is worth noting. And by the way, you can get pressure on him. It doesn't mean you're going to bring him down. He's got 51 pressures, or he's taken on 51 pressures this season, Anthony. Do you know how many sacks Lamar Jackson has taken?
Probably like 4.
Very close. 5.
Ah.
5 on 51 pressures. I think it's the third best of regular starters in the league. It's 10%.
We saw one last week against Sam Hubbard. He had him dead to right.
Boom.
And could not get him down. Ooh. And then fell to his knees after he saw Lamar throw across his body to Isaiah Likely for a touchdown. That actually would be a backbreaker.
Old quarterback double stiff arm.
Man. He is special,
he's
man.
He's so strong.
He is one thing I will say, though, Craig, he does have 3 fumbles on the season already. And I think, I'm not going to say we should, you know, be trying to, like, rely on or lean on those, but we haven't really had too many fumbles. We haven't had too many interceptions. We don't have an interception on the season. So
no, Joe Witt was very upset about that when he talked about it yesterday. He's like, I've never had a 5-game stretch in my career where we haven't had an interception. I don't know what the heck we're doing. I got to do a better job.
Yeah, but I think if we can get one of those fumbles, I think that would be huge. Just because when the Ravens have lost the game, it's primarily been due to them turning the ball over.
And it should have been last week. Like, he fumbled a snap in overtime, and then all of a sudden they won. Yikes. I think with one, the Commanders have been so close. Like, they should have had Watson 2 or 3 times last week.
Mm-hmm.
Quan had one where it's just like, rah, jumps the route. It should have been a pick 6 the other way, and he just drops it. So they've got to get some soon. BSJ had the one that was out of bounds that he did pick, but it was, you know, bad throw. There's no way for him to come down and bounce with it.
Yeah.
So I think that is something that Lamar will give you some opportunities. Like, especially if you can get pressure up the middle,
mm-hmm.
he will throw. He'll throw over it, and sometimes he'll be inaccurate. And Lamar's accuracy in general can come and go a little bit. So, you know, he is as potent and as explosive, and like, whatever misses he has are worth it. It's like a guy who's a little bit higher strikeout, but it's like, yeah, but he hits 50 home runs a year. Like, what do you, I'll take 4 extra strikeouts if he's going to hit 50 homers.
Yeah.
So this is not a criticism of Lamar other than like, no, am I going to pick him in an accuracy contest? No. Can he get hot? Yeah. I think it was 15 or 15 in the second half last week. So like, he is a little, I would say it's not that he's inaccurate. He's streaky with his accuracy. And so if you get him on a run where he's not hitting guys, can you pick one off? And then obviously, like you said, the fumbles. By the way, I did call that last week. I did call Watson being loose with the football and getting smashed. So we'll see what they can do against Lamar this weekend. All right. We'll give our picks a little later on in the show, but now it is time for yours. 301-230-0980 on a finish Friday. Commanders, Ravens, who you got next? It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. And Anthony, in the commercial break, I told you I had to fix an audio problem. I thought I fixed it, and now I see that I didn't. So can you stall for me for 5 seconds?
Time for Craig to put on his engineer hat. I'm not going to lie. Craig really is a problem solver. If he wasn't in this profession, I would definitely think he'd be an engineer or something of that.
I fixed it. I know. Well, hold on. Keep talking, because now you're too quiet.
You fix problems, Craig. That's all
I
was saying.
That's right. Yeah. I know. I my headphones are still on, Anthony. I can hear everything you're saying. Very kind of you. I just need you to kill about, I don't know, 5 more seconds.
I got you. Yeah, as I was saying, Craig wasn't in the communications field. Would definitely expect him to be in the problem solver kind of feel, even though engineering is really hard. Really,
I was gonna say, problem solving I'm good at. Engineering requires math, and notoriously, Anthony, not my strong suit.
Ah. But you know, I think math is one of those things where, I don't know, you sort of can use your friends to, you know, help you get by, because you probably don't need them later on in life. Probably don't
your
need
friends.
Yeah. or your classmates to help you get by? Math?
Are you talking about like in school or in like?
I think a lot of engineers.
I was good at math in school. Now okay. I'm bad at it.
Oh, okay.
That's probably also what it is. Kids just, learn your rusty. Stuff. Yeah, yeah, sure. I am very formulaic in certain things. So like if I can learn how to solve something, I mean it is kind of funny because like some of the weight like when I'm in coaching and weight training, mm-hmm. like it's not actually math. You just memorize. People are like how many plates go on the bar, and I'm like. Like, give me a number between, like, 1 and 300. Give me a number between 100 and 300.
135.
Well, that's easy. That's 245s.
Okay.
Like, I'm good at weight math. That's kind of what I'm saying.
345.
That's not between 100 and 300, but if you go three 45s on each side plus two 10s, that'll get you to 340. No, sorry. Two 10s and two 5s.
Yep.
That'll get you 345.
That's good math.
Yeah, see, I can do that. Put it in increments of 45s, 25s, 10s, and 5s, and
yeah.
I'm good. How do you solve for the blah, blah, blah of the blah, blah, blah? Sometimes my brain gets a little twisted.
Yeah, I need you to solve for X when Y is equal to M.
No. Here's the other problem I'm trying to solve right now. One, we got no one on the phone line. So if you're like, aren't you guys going to do your predictions? It's like, no, this is your turn to do your prediction. So finish Friday. Give us a call, 301-230-0980. John Keim coming up at 5 o'clock. So we'll get Cake's take on the game. Excited for that. We'll pick all of the games at 5:30. We got our pick six at 6. You'll hear what Dan Quinn had to say today about a whole bunch of stuff. Actually, sorry, no, we won't. Pick six at 6 on a Friday. We're going to pick six players that we have in the game.
Yes, we are.
So that's the Friday formula. The other thing that I'm trying to figure out right now, Anthony, is Tony just hit me up in our Hoffman Show Fantasy League, and he tried to trade me. He wants Davante Adams off my team. And he's like, first he tried to offer me Raheem Mostert. I've got a couple of weird ones. I actually did get a trade that was...
Raheem Mostert, wow.
Hold on, before we get into Davante Adams, was I an idiot for turning down this trade? I have B-Rob. Yep. Someone offered me Tyreek Hill for B-Rob last week.
Yes.
There's a part of me that thinks I was an idiot for that, but also with Miami's quarterback situation, I don't trust it.
Yeah, like but Craig, when you trade in fantasy, you're not thinking about the now. You're thinking about the future. Tua will be back.
Well, we don't know that he's going to be back. That's the thing.
It's a gamble that I would have been willing to take. I think
okay,
Tua
but at least
back.
We admit it was a gamble, right?
Yeah. It's a little gamble, though.
B-Rob's having a pretty big year.
He's playing solid, but guess what?
And I also like I've got good receivers. They're all freaking hurt.
Well, yeah, if you don't need a receiver,
that's the thing. Like my receiving core is I got Puka. Wait, like my guy in waiting is Puka. I don't need to wait for a guy's quarterback to come back. I just need Puka to come back.
Yeah,
I have JJ. I have Devontae. I have Gabe Davis. And then starting this week, due to buys and other things, I might flip some of these guys around, but Romeo Doubs, Wan'Dale Robinson, who this is a PPR league, so he gets 1,000 targets even if they don't go anywhere.
No more. And then
Jameson Williams. Like, yeah. I don't need receivers.
Yeah, you don't. You need some running backs.
But I've got James Conner and B-Rob.
That's only two people.
That is the problem. If B-Rob doesn't play, I literally need a running back. I do not have another.
You better go
on
get
roster.
Jeremy, or somebody might have picked him up. I think I'm
Jeremy.
Might.
Oh, McNichols?
Yeah.
Yeah, I also thought about, I guess if B-Rob doesn't play, that's probably the smart play. The other guy I was thinking about is Tyrone Tracy, the Giants running back.
Is Devin Singletary playing? If he's not,
no.
Tyrone is definitely a great play because, man, that dude is special.
Yeah, I kind of almost like that one better, to be honest. He currently, he's on waivers Saturday. Yeah, we could do that temporarily. The problem is I don't have anybody that I particularly want to cut either. And one of these receivers?
Gabe Davis. He stinks.
But he, relatively speaking, that would be the guy.
If I had a guy to cut, either him or Romeo, but you're playing Romeo this week, so probably Gabe.
Yeah, I'm a little scared about cutting Gabe Davis, but I don't think he's ever going to be consistent. And then that's the worst guy to have in fantasy, the guy who is going to sit on your bench all year. In a couple weeks, he's going to give you 25, and then you're like, well, I'm an idiot. I didn't play him. And then
It's going to give you three subpar weeks. Yep.
And then, yeah. And then you play him the next week and you're like, why did I play this guy? Yep. So that's true. So I'm going to go Tyrone Tracy. But like, that's the thing is like, he's like, what do you want? His off of his team. Hold on. Let me go to Tony's team. And it's not like Tony has a bad team. He's undefeated. He's the number one guy in the league right now, which also makes me not want to trade with him. Mm. But he wants.
Yeah. Don't make the rich richer, man.
He's got the one running back that does intrigue me is Kenneth Walker, but he already played this week. He's got Dobbins, and then he's got A-Chain and Mostert.
Well, yeah, don't trade for Mostert. He was trying to fleece you, Craig. That's what we call it.
Of course he is.
Yeah,
but he did, in fairness, counter and be like, "What do you want for him?" And I was like, "Well, let me ask for something ridiculous." And the truth is, I don't really know how Tony's winning this league right now. I guess St. Brown's had a good year in Detroit. Anthony Richardson's currently a starting quarterback.
Wow.
Goff has been his other quarterback, but he had Nico Collins. That's how he's been winning the league. But now Nico's on IR, which is why he wants Davante Adams.
Yeah, and he's put up the most points, too.
Yeah, I mean, Tony knows his stuff.
Yeah, he clearly does.
But
it's all good, Craig. I'm coming for that number one spot. Who I play this week, man?
I play him this week. That's the other thing. I don't really want to trade with you on a week that I'm playing you.
Yeah. That's probably best you not. You don't do that.
No Devontae for you. Back of the line. All right. Since nobody wants to call and give predictions, everyone's scared to do it. Here's what we're going to do next. We had the best WNBA Finals game, if not the best NBA or WNBA Finals game that we've seen in forever last night. What a freaking night that was. I didn't know if we'd have a chance to talk about it on this Football Friday, but I really want to. And so we're going to talk about that tremendous basketball game next. Then John Keim coming up at 5 o'clock. Back to the football coming up at 5 o'clock. But right now, let's talk some hoops, shall we? It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Yeah. John Keim, 5 o'clock, but last night in New York at Barclays Center was one of the great playoff games you will see in any sport ever. Just an absolutely epic comeback by the Minnesota Lynx, who trailed by as many as 18, did not lead in regulation until less than 10 seconds to go, and ultimately beat the New York Liberty on the road in game one of the WNBA Finals in overtime. Wow, what a bizarre, Anthony, frankly, game. And it's bizarre because of, to me, it's like one of the bizarre things there is about the key play and like who's involved in it and how it went down. The key play comes late in the game where Courtney Williams, who had like I said multiple times during that game, man, Courtney Williams is killing the Lynx right now. Their point guard who's just can be a little streaky, got on kind of a bad streak, but was still taking a lot of shots. I think she was putting a lot of pressure on herself to make plays, and she's missing all these shots. And then she starts to hit a couple and, you know, stays aggressive. And then all of a sudden, she's hot coming down the stretch, helping close the gap. And up three with, 8 seconds to go or something like that?
Yeah, it was 8 seconds to go, and then it was 5 seconds when she hit the shot.
Yeah, so 5 seconds to go. Offensive rebound, Minnesota, kick out. Courtney Williams takes a three, hits it, fouled by Sabrina Ionescu, who had been pretty fantastic the entire night, despite a bad shooting night. She still found ways to be really impactful. I mean, she had 4 steals in the game, 5 rebounds, 3 assists to go with ultimately 19 points. Like, she got to, she just kept firing away, hit a couple of big shots, 8 for 26 from the field, but it felt like every shot she hit was major. And so in a game where Ionescu had made some big plays, even if she hadn't been great, she makes the worst play of the game against a player who hadn't been that great, but then all of a sudden hit all the big shots. It was just wild how that it came down to that. I felt like a genius for part of this because Jonquel Jones looked fantastic. 24 points, 10 boards for New York. But there's no question, Anthony, last night, the best player on the floor was Nafisa Collier. The runner-up to Asia Wilson for MVP this year has 21 points, 6 blocks, 8 boards, 3 steals, 2 assists. That has never happened, that combo of stuff, or better in WNBA history. 20 plus points, 6 plus blocks, 3 plus steals, 8 plus rebounds. And it includes, by the way, a block on Jones in overtime that is one of, actually, sorry, regulation. That was the best finals block since LeBron on Iguodala. Like, yeah. She is, how would you describe, like, she gets pinned. It's an offensive foul on Jonquel Jones is what it was. She's got Fee's arms pinned. So, like, Fee looks like if your toddler, maybe not your toddler because they'd be too small. If you've got a kid who's, like, 12 and you were to lock, go back to back and then lock arms and then lift them up. Imagine that if you did not see this play. Now imagine that you or your 12-year-old wiggles an arm free and blocks your shot. That's what happened on that play because Jonquel Jones has 4 or 5 inches on Nafisa Collier, and she still found a way to get free, time it up, and get that block. She hits key shots. She just finds ways. And I think the thing that's most impressive, Anthony, too, is the mentality of the Minnesota Lynx. Just a bunch of dogs that keep on fighting, keep on grinding, do not let stuff bother them. They got absolutely screwed by a call late in this game. There's a jump ball that ultimately is the thing that sends this thing to overtime. A jump ball call because the refs didn't see that a ball goes out of bounds off Breanna Stewart's foot. They thought it was simultaneous contact out of bounds. Jump ball. Stewart ultimately gets fouled after some ball gets knocked out of bounds again and inbounds, and she hits 1 of 2 free throws. She could have won the game in regulation free throws. She didn't. But it should have been Minnesota ball, and Minnesota just kept on defending, and then in overtime, they do what they need to do to win, and they stole one. They straight up stole one in a series that now they have home court advantage in. All they got to do is win their home games, and they win a WNBA championship, and it would be like the 7th time in the 28-year history or whatever it is of the WNBA that the New York Liberty would lose in the finals.
That game, man, the electricity that we saw, you know, just around the Barclays.
Great man, crowd.
Man, they put on for sure. And I think this game one encapsulates pretty much what we've all been saying, like, women play good basketball and it needs to be, you know, supported more. And I think there were a lot of people that are watching yesterday's game that were like, yo, this is crazy. Yeah, you've been missing it for the past 20 some years. Like, they've been this good. But
by the way, did you see the open, like the broadcast open that Dawn Staley voiced? I saw it on Instagram. I assume it was the broadcast open.
I didn't get to see it. I walked in my house.
The theme was, we've been here.
Oh, wow.
And Dawn voiced it, and it was fantastic.
That's tough.
But the theme of, like, yeah, we've been here. We've been doing this since before the spotlight was bright. Mm-hmm. And that's 100% true. But, like, I'm telling you, if this series is, like, there's so much good ball that's going to be played.
Yep.
And it's tough, and it's tenacious, but they're still shot-making. I mean, Kayla McBride is 4 of 7 from 3 this game, and she just kept ripping the net. Like, they needed a key shot to just stay attached enough. Bam, Kayla McBride finds herself open. I cannot believe Courtney Williams was 9 of 18. Like, I cannot believe in this game she wound up getting to 50% because it feels like she missed so many shots. It was out of control. And yet, she finds a way to stick with it, come back, and she's just that dog mentality. I mean, Alana Smith, nasty ankle turn in this game, but does a good job. 9 points, 9 boards, 4 assists. Like, Minnesota plays fantastic team basketball. By the way, Natisha Heidemann coming off the bench, she's a plus 10 in 13 minutes.
Yeah, they end up going small.
Huge, yeah.
That's how they came back. They went small with her. They inserted her, and they were able to, you know, get up and down the floor. Like, she was pushing the pace. They were spacing, and it was a lot of team rebounding because Jonquel, again, is a problem. New York's bigger than them, but the Lynx, you know, they fall on the boards. Even undersized with Heidemann in there alongside Courtney Williams, they were just able to be scrappy, and that's what they are. They're some scrappy little dogs. That's
they
what
are. They are. They'll yap at you. They'll snap at your ankles. But and then they got a big dog, by the way. Cause like Fee, the job, we talked yesterday on the show at the very end when we picked this series and did our preview, like Stewie versus the Lynx this year. The Lynx won the season series, but Stewie was outrageous. She had like 17 points, 17 rebounds in one game, 38 and 18 in another. She was unbelievable. And Nafisa Collier, the defensive player of the year in the league, just went bleep that. Like, it's not happening on my watch. And by the way, these two are great friends, have known each other for a long time, both UConn alums. There's a league that's going to be happening during the W offseason called Unrivaled that, like, 30 of the best players in the world are going to be playing either 3-on-3 or 1-on-1. But it's, like, there's a lot more money involved in it. A way that players can stay here and not go overseas. And Stewie and Fee are the ones actually behind it. So they're putting that on the side, and they are just getting after it. And the defense that Fee played on Stewie, she goes 6 of 21 from the field, 2 of 6 from 3, 18 points, 9 rebounds. Like, she still got 18 points because she's Stewie, and, like, she's going to get something. But it's going to be really hard for them to win if she's going 6 of 21. And that was a direct result of good team defense, but primarily good one-on-one on-ball defense by Collier, who's just, like, cannot. I said this on the WNBA show that we do on YouTube, but, like, I don't understand how she does it. Not because, like, hey, she's unheralded, she was a sixth pick in the draft back a couple years ago, whatever. She's a mom of a toddler. Any of you parents out there listening right now, if you have a toddler, do you have by 7 o'clock at night, do you have the energy to do anything? The answer is no. I know that is true because I have a 3-year-old niece, and there ain't no way that by 8 o'clock at night, either of her parents would be ready to do anything equivalent to playing a WNBA basketball game. Okay, their days might be slightly different. But do you realize this woman is the mother of a toddler? One, the fact that she gave birth like 2 years ago and is back to being one of the best players in the world. Moms are superheroes. That's crazy. Two, she is the parent of a toddler and has the energy to go out and play the world's best defense on Breanna Stewart. That's crazy to me. That blows my mind.
And she's only 6'1 doing it. Like, she's playing bigger than, like, what she actually is. Breanna Stewart, 6'4". Jonquel, 6'6". Like, and she's been doing this all season, guard 1.
She's 6 blocks.
It doesn't even matter who you are.
6 blocks. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's nuts. It's bananas. Moms are superhumans. So congrats to Minnesota on game 1. Game 2 is on Sunday. When we get back, the one, the only, John Keim on Commanders Ravens.